Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another episode of 3GT, where three guys get together and theologize about different topics of the day. I am your host for this episode, Scott Hunt, and I am joined, as always, by my two co-hosts, Barry York and Kyle Borg. How are you guys doing today?
I'm well. Is that how this goes now? Like, if you start leading off, you're actually the host, and we're just the lowly co-hosts.
Are you piling on me now too, Barry?
Well, let's put aside Barry's comments because they don't add anything to this. I'm doing delightful today. Thanks for asking, Scott.
Hey, how are you handling COVID, by the way, Kyle? You hanging in there?
Handling what? What is this thing you're speaking? What? Yeah. Is that a thing? Okay. I don't get it. What is COVID?
Anyway, we'll move on from this. I don't want to distract Kyle from the business at hand. So spring is in the air. Fall is in the air again. I know. Spring is in the air. It's a great song. Barry would know it. It's from the 70s, I think, right? fall is in the air again, which means schools are starting back, kind of. Homeschoolers are getting back into the swing of things, I assume. Kyle, are you still homeschooling your children? And by you, I mean your wife, because I don't think you have the...
Finish that sentence, Scott.
Wherewithal.
My wife provides the education. I provide the meal ticket. So yes, actually today is the first day of our children's homeschooling. So we are back at it.
And Barry, this is kind of a first for you, right? First time in how many years that you don't have a child in school, other than, I mean, college, obviously you do, but your youngest just graduated, so you don't have any elementary, junior high school students in your home. How are you managing?
Well, we're doing fine in the sense that she just started college this week, but she is living at home, so we still have her, so that's nice.
Oh, that is nice. But another thing that just started, is, as I understand, is seminary. That's kind of keeping you busy too, right?
Oh, yes, certainly is.
That was a delightful answer. Yes, it certainly is.
Boy, that co-host is not, you want to elaborate at all, Perry? Like, throw the great mighty host a bone here.
Yes, goodness. Well, you know, I say I'm the host, by the way, because, I mean, sitting with you guys, it's so intimidating. I mean, Barry's intellect and that, you know, Kyle, you know, it's just so intimidating.
Hey, Scott, out with it. It is intimidating to bask in the garden of my turbulence. So,
so seriously, Kyle, as an aside, do you sit, you know, every week with a pen and pad and just say, what can I say this week on the episode? That's just,
oh yeah, all the time. And actually Rachel, so there's these old rumors and probably Barry as professor of homiletics has maybe told the story, but Charles Spurgeon was known to preach in his sleep. And Susanna, his wife, when she began hearing him mutter, she would grab a paper and pen and she would write down what he was saying. And it would actually form the body and the content of his sermons. It's much the same in my house for this podcast. I dream 3GT and Rachel has a pen and paper on her nightstand ready to record the insults that I have to use.
Thank you, Rachel. I appreciate that. I do want to kind of focus our attention now, if we can, perhaps to the topic of the day. I would like to talk about the seminary. We've kind of hinted that it has started up. And Barry, are you pleased with the way things are going thus far with the seminary, this 2020-2021 school year?
Yes, we are. We have been making plans. Of course, every school was disrupted by the corona crisis back in March, and many seminaries and colleges went completely online as we did. But we have made the decision to bring the students back on campus. And so we've been working at the provisions for so doing. Even this month that this is being recorded, we've had some other classes on campus, some DMIN courses. I'm getting ready to teach a class on church planting, an intensive 1 week class here right before the school year starts. And then the second week of September, Labor Day week, we'll be in it to full-fledged, and we're really excited. Some of the students are already beginning to arrive in the area, and even today there was a couple of them in the building talking, and after months of real silence because the students aren't there, which was surreal, it's exciting to start seeing them arriving and coming on campus.
I have to wonder, you know, a lot of schools went to this virtual learning at the end of last year. And you mentioned the seminary did too, went online. Is there a difference? I mean, can you see a difference in the teaching and the reception of the teaching in person versus this online? Or are there some classes? I'm asking multiple questions. So go ahead and speak to that if you would.
Yeah, you would. As you talk to both professor and students, you hear that this is a vast difference between teaching to a camera and listening to the recording of it, or even if it's live, sitting in a virtual setting and listening and interacting with the professor. We really believe that theology is best done in community because there's so much more that goes on than just content transmission, which is primarily what happens through distance learning. It has its value, and we're thankful that we could do that. So we had a distance learning program in place since 2014 at RPTS. And so when the corona crisis hit, we were able to transition pretty seamlessly over into all online for that period of time. But we really believe that that's it's just not best. And our students who come to campus and get the full experience would say the same. And so we've purposely set up our programming, particularly for pastoral training, where we're not encouraging that they'd get their whole Master of Divinity degree online. We fight pretty strongly against that because not only are they coming to learn theology from the professors and in the community, but they are to be spiritually formed, and that just happens through relationships. And your relationships can only go so far if you're not personally involved with people. We want people having an embodied experience with others, a physical experience with others. And so we think that's just vital to their formation. There's also at RPTS a real emphasis on the practical side of ministry, that you don't only learn just by receiving information, but that you have to put that into practice. So in preaching, we have a very hands-on experience where I'm interacting a lot with the students in their sermons. We have counseling emphasis at RPTS, and so our counseling professors working. We have practicums where students go out and do visitation in a nursing home. They go out on the streets and do evangelism. So there's just lots of things like that going on, that if you just all of a sudden put them solely at a distance from us, it really is difficult to continue to form them. And then one other thing I just quickly add, I'm sure Kyle would testify to this, that relationally, not only with professors, but with fellow students, it's so important. I have friendships with guys I went to seminary that exist still today, and we interact. One of my children is married to one of my best buddies' child. Things like that that take place at seminary that are in some ways the non-tangibles when you're going, but they become the realities when you're there and even afterward, those friendships that form. And I think those have every bit as much of an impact on a student. I see at our seminary, there's a lot of diversity. There's different denominations represented. There's different cultures represented. And there's a lot of learning experience that takes place and talking theology and concepts with people who are different than you. So for all those reasons, and I could add more, we really think it's important for our students to be with us in so far as possible.
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, I can only imagine, you know, that how much better it is to be in person. I was thinking in my head how much more intimidating it would be to be in person with Kyle rather than just recording this online. But you've been awfully quiet, Kyle. So I want to ask you a question, if you know. I don't know if you do. But what is kind of the history of seminaries? I mean, you don't read about Paul being sent to the seminary in Jerusalem when he was converted and wanted to be a pastor. You don't hear about Paul telling other people how to set up a seminary. So when did seminary start? Do we know?
Well, I mean, so the way that seminary is practiced, from my understanding, the way that it's usually expressed today, is a fairly modern, it's a result of a lot of modern influences. It does date back, the way that we think of a seminary as an educational institution. Well, let me just say, I think there is some biblical precedence for an idea like this. You know, you can think of the need in Matthew 28:19 to make disciples. You make disciples by the ministry of the word. You can think of the way that the Apostle Paul in 2 Timothy 2:2 emphasizes the idea of entrusting the ministry to faithful men. And you think of Titus 1:9 emphasizing that those who will carry on the ministry need to be articulate in the faith. They need to be grounded in these things. And so there is an emphasis on, for lack of a better terms, what I would call an educated pastorate. And that is necessary. It's biblically necessary. You can think of the Old Testament and I don't have all the knowledge of this, but you know, there were schools of prophets and the prophets learned together. You can think of the Apostle Paul. For instance, in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 19, the Apostle Paul for 2 years went daily into what is called the school of Tyrannus, and he reasoned with them. And Kistemaker, in his commentary, says, for all intents and purposes, this is Paul in some ways establishing a seminary. He's going to an institution, he's going to a school, and there he's reasoning with them and teaching them the things of Christianity. So I don't, you know, whatever other comments, don't let that detract from the fact that we do need an educated pastorate. We need pastors who are competent in these things. And I think the modern practice of seminary is a very good, expedient way to train men in those things. But the way that seminary is practiced is currently a bit of more of a modern development. From my understanding, it actually, and this might make some hair stand up on the back of some people's necks, it comes out of the Roman Catholic tradition, where seminary comes from the word seminarium, which really means seedbed. And Catholics had established these seedbeds, these seminaries for spiritual formation, and that has given rise to the development of what we see now as seminaries being these educational institutions. And of course, there's been a lot of development, especially coming out of World War II, in the change of culture in the world. A lot of seminaries, our denominational seminary would be excepted from that, but a lot really, it is amazing when you look at a history of seminaries, how few actually stand intergenerational, the test of time. Sadly, tragically, most seminaries go the way of the world very, very quickly. But you also see other influences. You know, seminaries have taken on all kinds of new degree programs, so that's fairly modern and new. Whereas they used to just kind of train pastors, you see more emphasis on counseling or theology or religious arts, things like that. So I'm not well-versed in the history, but that's some of my best understanding. Kind of the way that seminary is done today has some roots. It has some precedence in the Bible, in history, but it is a developing thing, I think.
I might add to that, Scott, and I appreciate, Kyle, so many things you're saying. You know, Jesus taught his disciples by having them with him, that they were with him those 3 years, and that was how he trained them in the ministry that he imparted to them. And as you see in Paul's life, wherever he was going, he was always had others traveling with him. So again, those aren't, as Kyle's alluding to, those aren't the modern concept necessarily of the seminary, which is more stationary, obviously. But you do see too, you know, at Calvin at Geneva, he established an academy there, and people like John Knox came there to learn from him and was amazed at what he learned there and what it enabled him to do as he went back ultimately to Scotland to minister. And so typically, I think the way that seminaries really developed, the pattern that developed was there were men that were gifted that people sought out to be trained by. It could have been done in formal ways, and there's still bodies in the church and places in the world where that's still more the model that's used. Our own seminary has a 200 plus year history, and basically you could divide it in half. About the first half of that time, the seminary was basically the synod of the church setting apart a professor, deeming a local pastor the guy that other men would come and train under in his ministry there. And then it became, as the church grew and developed, it became more formalized. There were became more professors, and it became centralized in the Pittsburgh area. And the building we're in now, we've been in almost 100 years. And still, even back when they first moved in, it was a very small setting, just a handful of students and one or two profs. And it's just grown over time and become more formalized. And one of the things that Kyle's pointing out, maybe we'll get to that, are some of the challenges of seminaries. I think they're a particular target of the evil one. And so as they grow and develop, as resources and even, I would say, power and influence gets centered or seated in a particular location, of course, it can become corruptive. And so that's why it's really important for the church, I think, to be watching over the seminary. That's why I'm so thankful our particular seminary is a part of a denomination, because that provides oversight. And on our board, we have not only pastors, but ruling elders. And, they just look at the practicalities of what's going on at the seminary. And so that's a guarding influence, I think, that we've enjoyed over our long history.
Yeah, and I think just to qualify real quick in giving some of that history, I don't think the way that we do seminary in the contemporary world is wrong. You know, I don't think that the Bible narrowly prescribes one way that you are to train pastors for the ministry. And I actually think there's a lot to commend to it. You know, sometimes in my more challenging days of seminary, I kind of rolled my eyes and wished that we could go back to, you know, just let me be in a local church under a pastor and learn that way. But the Bible teaches us that, you know, there's safety in abundance of counselors, which I think seminaries, the way that we practice it, it allows for that. You know, there are men that are specialized in certain aspects of pastoral ministry who have been able to develop that in a way that maybe, you know, we can't all be a jack of all trades. None of us are an Apostle Paul. And so I think there's a really positive aspect to that. I also think, you know, I did not go to our denominational seminary. I went to Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary in Grand Rapids. All of my professors were also pastors. And one thing that I loved is the diversity of those men, because the Lord equips pastors, but, you know, he equips us as we've been created to be. And it's very helpful. Whereas if, you know, you're just kind of doing an apprentice model where you're just kind of learning under one pastor, I don't think that gives you a real good picture of Christian ministry, where the Lord employs people of all kinds of different personalities for this work. And so I found that to be a benefit in the seminary that I went to, is realizing, you know, the Lord gifts and equips different men. Not all of us have to be serious, stern Dutchmen. You know, we can be short, fat Irishmen that like to laugh a lot as well. So.
Well, thank you, Kyle. I do appreciate that. And you bring up an interesting point and something I kind of want to look into. You mentioned that during some of the darker days, I think, of seminary, you were kind of shaking your head and wondering why you do this. What are some of the weaknesses that you guys see in the present seminary model? Are there any weaknesses?
Oh, sure there are. I think, as I mentioned earlier, the seminary can become seen as the only way to train men. And I don't believe that. As much as I really admire and work for a seminary, I know there are other ways to train men. I know on mission fields, for instance, there are men being trained for ministry, and they're using the resources. But it's much like our earlier model of being under usually one or maybe two gifted men who are training the others. So that one of the weaknesses would be to just think that this is the only way to do it. As I said earlier, there can be too much emphasis on the academic at times, because we're really, if we're a seminary to train men for pastoral ministry, Jesus did that on the move while he was actually ministering to people. Obviously, he had lots of time of teaching that the disciples were sitting under and hearing from him, but they were also doing ministry. And I think one of the faults often I see in seminaries is that it's all about the books. And I've had guys that I really believe are good shepherds. They've got shepherding hearts. But as one of my friends likes to say, I'm a blue-collar guy in a white-collar world. He sees a lot of times pastors in his setting. It looks like you have to be very intellectual and be overly theological in order to be an effective pastor. And I think one of the things we have to be careful about is, yeah, you have to have sound theology. We have to examine our men and make sure they really uphold the doctrines of the faith. But some men are going to be more articulate, more gifted, be able to write and express things. That's not every pastor, though. We need men who are able to go out and come alongside working men and women and care for them, love them, teach them the Bible, preach to them faithfully, shepherd them faithfully, and not think every man has to be, you know, a high intellectual. So that, and even as saying that, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have strong guidelines and seek to teach thoroughly our students and uphold sound, rigorous theology. I'm all for that. But we just have to be careful in the manner in which we go about that, that we don't take someone that God's clearly set apart to lead and guide his people and say, well, you didn't necessarily write this paper well enough or whatever, and so you can't be a pastor.
And not only write the paper enough, because I agree with that, I think too that modern seminaries have been so wrapped up in the educational system. You know, most seminaries you can't get into unless you have a bachelor's degree. And I've often bemoaned the fact as a rural pastor, man, I wish I had gone and done auto mechanics. What a useful skill to have in a community that I'm in or a trade. But the way that seminary is built and the way that it functions, men who have associate's degrees or are trained in those trades, well, you got to go get a 4-year degree before you can now come into the seminary and get this Master's of Divinity. And so I think there's an aspect of that.
Hey, Kyle.
I think, you know,
hey, Kyle, just
my seminary. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to say an accredited seminary, it used to be that you could only allow a certain percentage in, but they've actually changed those rulings now. So we're in favor of, which is that you don't have to have a bachelor's degree. So we'll bring in a student without a bachelor's degree. They do come in their first year, or I'm sorry, not their first year, but their first quarter on probation to just make sure they're able to do the work, they're ready to do the work. But if they get passing grades, they just go on and are like any other student. So some of our best students have been those who did not have a bachelor's degree, but certainly had a degree of how to live in this world, how to do real work and that type of thing. So,
yep. And I think, you know, having sat on an ATS committee, you know, I think that's a very positive development, because the pastorate is not, you know, in a Master's of Divinity is not, it's for lack of a better term, it's a professional degree more than a research one, and more than, you know, and we need to remember that we are training men for the ministry. We're not training them to know how to write, you know, yes, the pastorate sometimes requires you to write papers and being a churchman and things like that. But I'm very happy to hear that. I think too, for me, seminary was, I have a bit of PTSD coming out of it. I think one of the challenges for me, I worked full-time to support my family while taking classes full-time. And I don't know that there's any way to improve a circumstance like that, but it was a nightmare. It was so, so hard to be working 40 plus hours a week, plus doing a minimum of 12 credit hours. And, you know, and some people, well, scale back on your credit hours. At the same time, we need to find a way to balance that with fanning into flame the gifts that have been given. You know, you don't want men to be hanging on and doing 9 years of seminary just because they need to be able to support their family at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very real challenge. I also think
Kyle, the can I talk to that too?
Nature of it. Oh yeah, here
gotta,
we go.
I got to respond to these things, man. I got to respond to these things. I totally.
Your rebuttal can only take 30 seconds.
I'm not rebutting. I'm just supporting. I totally agree. The church has to come alongside its pastoral students and help them. And I'm thankful the Reformed Presbyterian Church takes that seriously. And I think we can still continue to improve in that. We've just started a program called SOS, Support Our Students, Tuition Relief Program, where we're working with people to befriend students and help them to help pay their tuition bills so that takes some of the pressure off of them in order for them to be able to go through the seminary without having all that difficult time doing so.
I thought SOS was going to stand for Save Our Sanity, but no, wow. I like that. So you see all the positive ways RPTS is working to mitigate all my concerns. I do think another weakness of seminary is in some ways the intensity of the study. You know, so for instance, at the seminary that I went to, and granted the reading lists, I love reading. And so it was just four solid years of that. But, you know, we were handed Herman Bavinck's four-volume Dogmatics and here, read. You know, and there is a wealth of knowledge in that. And when everything's coming at you a million miles a second and you're trying to process and you're trying to reason and you're trying to figure these things out, it doesn't always create the best environment to digest the things that you are learning. And the result of that, I think, is inevitably, and I don't know that there's any way out of it, seminary does become an ivory tower. As much as we try to not make it that, I think it's just necessary, is that there is a bit of an ivory tower. I'm pouring myself into these books. I know that internships, we try to do that to mitigate some of that. And that's all good and fine. But I think the more pastors I talk to, the more of us kind of say, you know, we're thankful for the seminary educations that we got. We realize very quickly what seminary is not actually able to prepare us for.
So can I respond to that one too, Scott?
Sure.
Kyle, just don't be such a wimp. Come on.
Thank you for that.
No, I'm just kidding. Well, one of the things that we are seeing is that men are taking longer to go through. And that can seem self-defeating because if it's a three-year program and you take 4 or 5 years to go through, that can seem hard to spend all that time at a seminary. However, I do see some wisdom in it, that it does allow things to saturate more. I just spoke with a student here just a month or so ago on my back porch as we were visiting, and we talked through some things, and he decided after 1 year of seminary that he's going to just take it a little slower. It takes off some of the financial pressures. It gives him some of the ability to let it saturate a little bit more. I was sharing with him how he'd be able to be more free to serve in the church and learn things from the pastors in the church and that type of thing. So I think sometimes, and that's one of the kickbacks on the distance learning, you know, the ability for students to remain in their own ecclesiastical setting for a period, do some seminary level work, but continue to work with your pastor, your congregation. We don't need to rush. Men trained for pastoral ministry, you can't just put them through a 3-year program and they out pops a pastor. It's spiritual formation. It's working in the church. And so each guy, I think one of the blessings right now, although it's really hard to navigate sometimes at an administrative level, is students want flexibility. The digital age has brought in flexibility. When I went to seminary, we all went through the same classes at the same time over 3 years, and we all did the same thing. Now every student wants it different. He's taking classes at different levels, asking for credit for this, wanting to do a couple this quarter, five the next, and I want to do mine in 2 years, I want to do mine in 7 years. And in some ways, even though it can be a nightmare to manage it at some points on our side of things, I think it's beneficial to the student, it's beneficial to the church. And the thing I really like about that is it's creating more of a partnership, I believe, with the local church. When I was a pastor, after I graduated from seminary, I felt like I didn't see the seminary for the next 15 years or whatever it was until I got on the board of the seminary. I would get a little newsletter, things in the mail, but I didn't feel very connected to it. Now in the digital age, I've got students all around the church, not only our PCNA, but other denominations. And I'm regularly interacting with them and their pastors in their local congregations. I know that they're taking some of the things they're hearing and going and talking about that with their pastor, elders, congregation. And I just think that's very healthy for creating more lines of connectivity between the local church and the seminary.
And by lines of connectivity, Barry means he has minions and spies scattered throughout the American Reformed world. We know what it means. I'm going to offer one, the one last thing, and Barry cannot gainsay this. Seminary doesn't focus enough on rural ministry. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Come on to RPTS, Kyle. We'll let you.
But again,
we have had you come and speak about rural.
You have. We had a pizza night. It was great. I think we talked in a previous episode as well, Carl Truman's lecture that he gave at Westminster, California, mm-hmm. Follow the Money. I think he brings some very, kind of the observations we've been making here are good and useful. I think Carl has offered some assessment of the current trajectory of many seminaries that I think is worth listening to. But having said that, I still do want to just emphasize that, the Bible doesn't prescribe one way, and there's not an ideal way to do this. Our goal is to entrust the ministry to faithful men who are well equipped and know how to divide the word of God rightly. And I think, Barry, the work that you're doing at RPTS is very much helping to aid in that. So I got a couple student examinations coming up next month, so I'll let you know how well you're actually doing.
Thanks a lot. Well, and one of the things you're emphasizing there, Kyle, is we very much believe in a mentoring approach, that we're there to mentor, to share our, not only just our theological knowledge, which we hope is helpful to them, but also our life experiences. And so we really take a mentoring approach. And that's when people are looking at seminaries, that's what they should be looking for, is I want to go to a place, just as a parent takes their child to a good piano teacher, they want someone who's going to really be able to train their child in piano. The same analogy holds true as you're thinking about seminary. You should be looking for people who can mentor you in the faith. And that's one of the reasons our motto is study under pastors, is that we are all pastors and have had pastoral experience. And so we want to shepherd people during this time as they head into, especially those going into pastoral ministries, as well as other fields of service.
Well, guys, we are running out of time. I'm sure you guys could speak of your experiences with seminary and what it was like and your good thoughts and bad thoughts about it. But we do need to wrap this up. Are there any concluding remarks that you would like to make regarding seminary?
No, well, not from, I'm just scared that Barry's going to just like rebut me or something if I make any comments. So I'll give him the closing word.
I even rebutted Carl Truman's Follow the Money, and he said he owes me a dinner for that. So Kyle, are you going to take me out to dinner for?
Hold him to it. Hey, let me know when you're going out to dinner with him, and I will fly out there so the three of us can go together.
Oh, okay.
Don't worry, guys. I'll hold the fort down in here.
I would just say, finally, there is a crying need for pastors, no matter how you cut it. We have in our own little denomination many empty pulpits and many places where there is a need for ministry and there's no one to send to them. And we need to, I get calls almost weekly of search committees and churches that are empty, asking who's available. And I have to often say, and not just my own denomination, but outside the denomination. And I have to tell them there's not very many people available. And so it's really a time for us to be praying for God to raise up. And that's not just so that people come to RPTS. It's so that the kingdom of God will continue to advance in a difficult generation.
Well, I can tell you as a layman, a parishioner who has benefited from those who've been trained at RPTS, I appreciate the work that you do and pray that the Lord would continue to do that work there at RPTS and at all the godly seminaries around our country. We are needing pastors. So with that, I do believe we will bring this episode to a conclusion. We thank you for joining us today. We do love and enjoy the feedback we receive from you, our listeners. So please feel free to comment or send us an email at 3gt.xyz@gmail.com. We are also listener funded. So if you would like to donate, if you find it in your heart to do that, we would appreciate it. But for now, we must say goodbye. So on behalf of Barry and Kyle, we do wish you a good day.
What a delightful conclusion.